The following is a paid program. The opinions expressed are solely those of the sponsor and not necessarily those of WFAS or its advertisers.
Welcome back to Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. I'm your host, Bernie Crooks, and we're heard right here on WFAS AM 1230 every Thursday evening from 6:05 to 6:35 p.m. As you know, we took a break for the summer, got some golfing in, relaxation, and now we're back for our fall season. And tonight, we've got a very special guest. We've got Joe Aceta, who's the court attorney and referee of Westchester County Surrogates Court. Welcome, Joe.
Great to be with you, Bernie. Thanks for having me.
And Joe, of course, has been on the show before, but things are always moving and shaking down at that surrogates court.
Well, sure are, Bernie. It's a busy summer. A lot of litigation, a lot of motions, a lot of news articles on some famous estates, so we've got a lot to talk about, I'm sure.
So let's start with a basic question. What's a surrogates court?
Well, the surrogates court is the court in each of the counties in New York State. In other states, it's called a probate court. But the surrogates court is the place where people's estates are administered when they die. Also, adoptions occur in our court. Guardianships occur for those who are under some type of disability, whether they be minors or people with some type of mental or developmental disability. And it's really, by and large, it's the probate court in the counties in the state of New York.
And how many surrogates are there?
In Westchester, there's one. In fact, all the 62 counties in New York have one, except for Brooklyn and New York County, Manhattan. Each of those surrogates courts have two surrogates.
So the surrogate is just the name for the judge of the surrogate court.
He's the judge that administers that court.
And is this judge somebody who's appointed by the governor? Is he elected? How does that work?
The surrogate judge is an elected position. In fact, the term is 10 years. The last election in Westchester County was in the year 2000. The current surrogate, Anthony Scarpino Jr., is now serving his 10-year term. I can't believe we're almost 8 years through that term, and he'll be hopefully running again in 2010. That's the next election.
And have you been with him the whole time?
I've been with him since he came on board, yes. I actually started in the surrogates court in 1995 under the previous surrogate, Al Emanuele.
And you mentioned the word probate before, Joe. I mean, a lot of clients, you know, in our business, the trust and estate business, we run into a lot of clients, and they equate the word probate with some other four-letter words. Is that true?
Well, it shouldn't be. And people hear probate, and it's a word, unfortunately, that does send a lot of people screaming into the night. And that's a misperception. And if I could spend a few minutes, Bernie, sort of dispelling that misperception, I'd love to. Probate is basically the word we use to prove that a will that somebody has drafted is actually that person's last wishes. They've taken the time, whether they've hired an attorney, which is by and large the case, or whether they've done something on their own, and there are certain formalities in New York State which are required in order for a will to be valid. Probate is the process by which the person who's named in the will as the executor brings the will to our court and asks the court to declare by a decree that the will is indeed a valid last will and testament of the person who made it. And pursuant to that will, the person's assets are distributed pursuant to the different provisions.
Now, it would be easy if we could just sort of tap on the person's coffin and ask them, well, Mary, was this your last will? But we can't do that, right?
Can't do that.
So how do we know it's the last one?
Usually that's done by the components that are built into the actual drafting of the will. Two witnesses in New York State are required. Generally, those witnesses should not have a monetary interest in the outcome of the will. In other words, they shouldn't be interested monetarily. They shouldn't be getting gifts under the will. And those witnesses generally fill out a form or either contemporaneously with the execution of the will or later when the will is offered for probate in our court by the proposed executor. And in essence, those witnesses say, this person showed up on this day. They declared to me that they wanted this to be their last will and testament. They asked me to act in that capacity, and they basically went through the provisions. We understood, or that person understood, that this, in fact, was their intention. They understood to a certain extent what their assets were. They understood who the natural objects of their bounty. That's a law school term, but the people you would generally think would be entitled to receive gifts, family members, loved ones, and the like. And usually by those two witnesses, and for the most part, it's wise to have an attorney also supervise the execution ceremony when the will is being executed. It's usually by that testimony that the will is proven to be true.
Now, are people allowed to make more than one will during their lifetime?
Sure, they can. But the catch-all is that once you make a new will, you're in essence revoking the previous will. In fact, most wills start with a paragraph of some sort which says, by making this new will, I hereby revoke all previous wills that I have made. Now, that, of course, can trigger some fireworks where you could have a different testamentary plan under one will and then turn it on its head in the other will. And this will generally be the cause for a lot of the litigation that occurs in our court.
So basically, what you and Surrogate Scarpino are attempting to do when somebody offers a will for probate, I guess one of the functions is to determine if it's valid and if it is, in fact, the last one that the person did?
That's what we hope to accomplish. And again, we don't do that on our own. The person who's named in the will as the executor has to come forward to our court and ask for that declaration. It's usually at that time that all the people who are named as beneficiaries in the will and all the people who conceivably are family members who may not have been included in the will have an opportunity. They are summoned to the court by an official notice, and it's incumbent upon them to appear at that time and to basically say whether or not they agree with the proposal that the will being offered is valid, or whether they in fact don't believe so and they feel as though perhaps the will was a product of undue influence or fraud, or perhaps that the person who made the will didn't have the wherewithal to make the will mentally at the time it was made.
All right, so let's touch on one topic here that you briefly mentioned. Lots of times we'll get a call from somebody. My uncle died, and I think he made out a will, and he told me one day that he was going to give me something, but it's been 6 months since he died. I don't know who his attorney is. I don't know who to call. How do I find out if I'm entitled to any money?
That's a great question, and people often call the court and ask that question. And the answer isn't simple, unfortunately. The answer is, well, if you're a family member by a certain degree of kinship, if you're a spouse, if you're children, if you're a parent, if you're a grandparent, depending on who dies in front of you, and you as you work your way down the chain of people I just mentioned, you are entitled to know what's in the will. If you're a friend and you have no blood relation to the person who's made the will, and you may have had a conversation by which that person told you he was going to leave you 50 grand, and lo and behold, you know that he's died, and you're sitting there waiting, and you don't receive the will, or you don't receive any notice that the will's been offered for probate, you really have no right to come to the court and demand to see that will. The only way that you will get notice of whether that will exists is if the executor has stepped forward and offered it to our court for the probate process.
Is there a way you can go to the court and see if someone has filed it? I mean, is this
confidential? You can. It's not confidential. In fact, wills are, in fact, filed for safekeeping with our court. Those are kept wrapped. And you have to have an interest of some sort, either a monetary interest under the will or an interest by blood, in order to be able to entitled to see that information.
So it's not a public document.
It's a quasi-public document. It can be kept on file, but technically its contents are published only once the court signs a decree admitting it to probate. At that point, it becomes a public record.
Very, very interesting. I tell you, so you've been doing this now for what, 13 years?
Since February 95, so it's closing in on 13 and a half, 14 years.
We've got a lot more to talk to Joe Arceta about, and we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Every parent worries about their kids. Unfortunately, when you have a child with disabilities, the worries are much greater.
Here's Bernie Crooks from the law firm of Littman Crooks.
Amy and Bruce had been talking about going to a lawyer to help them ever since Charlie was born. Charlie has cerebral palsy.
The experts at Littman Crooks helped Amy and Bruce set up a special needs trust to provide for Charlie's medical and financial needs for today and for the future.
The rules are very complex. you truly do need an expert to help you navigate through all the federal and state regulations to make sure that your child gets the benefits he or she is entitled to.
Do you have a child with special needs? Call the law offices of Littman Crooks.
We don't know what the future holds for Amy, Bruce, or their son Charlie, but what Amy and Bruce do know is that they've done everything in their power to ensure that Charlie has the best quality of life possible when Amy and Bruce are here and when they're not here.
Peace of mind.
Littman Crooks in White Plains, Manhattan, or online at specialneedsnewyork.com.
Welcome back to Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. I'm your host, Bernie Crooks, from the law firm Littman Crooks. We're based right here in White Plains with offices in Dutchess County and New York City. And our firm handles elder law, special needs planning, and estate planning. And tonight our guest is Joe Aceta, court attorney referee of the Westchester County Surrogates Court. And now that we know what probate is, Joe, tell us about, in your experience, what happens if things go wrong. Tell us some horror stories where maybe somebody tried to do their own will or something went wrong.
Well, a typical situation is when somebody takes it upon themselves to draft a will without the help or an assistance of an attorney. Now, there's nothing in New York which says that you need an attorney to make a will.
So it's legal, right?
It certainly is legal, right. But New York has a lot of common law in its history. And the common law has actually evolved into a set of statutes. And there are certain requirements that you have to meet in order to draft a valid will. The first and foremost of which of these are that it has to be properly witnessed. It has to be witnessed by two people who really have no monetary interest in the outcome. And this causes a problem for people who feel as though they can go onto any internet site and download a form document. They tend to fill these out incorrectly. They tend to fill out information in terms of substantive bequests, of giving an asset, giving a gift under the signature line. And in New York, you know that that's a tremendous no-no. You can't do that. Anything under your signature line that amounts to a substantive gift or a bequest is no good. It's invalid.
So that's an easy mistake to make.
Well, that's built into the common law, into the statute, to see that people just don't take information and write it in once the will is executed.
That seemed to make sense because then you could alter it.
Yeah. And that's a common scenario where it's unfortunate that you feel as though you can't help people who call in with this type of problem. You're left to tell them basically you should have had a professional help you out. And I know, and this is a common problem in the court where we have to walk a fine line. I am one of six attorneys on staff for the surrogate, and I'm now the senior court attorney. And we walk a fine line in terms of being able to advise people with procedures, and we must come up short in terms of giving them legal advice. We can't do that. As Judge Scarpino likes to say, we're his attorneys, not your attorneys. And we advise the surrogate. Part of our job is we draft opinions for the surrogate's review. But most importantly, the judge assigns us out to litigated matters, and we try to negotiate settlements. And the common theme that comes up over and over is people try to do too much in order to cut costs. And eventually, that backfires because they wind up having to pay a litigator to come in and undo the damage that's been done by them trying to save money to begin with.
Now, you've mentioned a couple of times litigation and disputes. Is there really that much? I mean, what do you think the percentages, if you know, of how many estates there are versus how many people are actually fighting over?
Well, I'm proud to say that in the most recent statistics from the Office of Court Administration, the Westchester Surrogates Court is now the leading court in terms of the most filings each year.
So we got a lot of people dying.
A lot of people dying, and there's also a lot of repeat filings from matters that are attendant to existing estates. But we do have a lot of people dying. And when you're dealing with that, issues come up. Now, I didn't mean to get away from your question. If you could repeat, what exactly did you ask me?
About, well, we were talking about litigation and
the far and away, a typical probate proceeding will be uncontested and will be able to be processed within 10 days to 2 weeks.
So 90%.
I'd say probably 85 to 90% are uncontested matters.
So if someone calls you up and say, "I heard probate takes 6 months to a year," that's
not the typical case. That's the exception rather than the norm.
Something went wrong.
Yeah, something went wrong in the form of somebody stepped up to challenge a will for one of usually a handful of reasons, and the reasons that usually come up are that the will was not properly drafted within the components of execution that I've mentioned before. It wasn't properly witnessed, wasn't properly signed, etc. That the decedent didn't have what we call the appropriate testamentary capacity.
Maybe had Alzheimer's or something.
Perhaps that, but one who has Alzheimer's is perfectly capable of executing a will. Testamentary capacity generally deals with the person who is executing the will's inability to know what their assets are in a general manner, to have a lack of knowledge about who their family members are, etc. That's the type of thing that would cause somebody to step in and say, you know what, strangers got the money here, we're family. And we know for a fact that he didn't know which end was up at the time he executed this
will.
So
the mere fact that he had Alzheimer's wouldn't per se disqualify him if he knew who his children were and his spouse, etc., etc.
That's right. And in fact, in litigated matters, you often hear the term, if you have that one lucid moment, in a moment of insanity or Alzheimer's, that's good enough to get a will admitted to probate. It's good enough to establish testamentary capacity.
So, is this the same capacity that it would be required to maybe execute a contract?
Well, executing those, in terms of the law, there are different standards for that. But the capacity to execute a will, is the threshold is rather low. You really don't need to know anything more than to show that the testator, that's the person making the will, knew in a general term what his assets were. You know, that's not knowing serial numbers of on DVD players or exact meets and bounds descriptions of real estate. In a general way, knowing what your assets are, knowing whom your loved ones would be, and knowing what the terms of the instrument that you're executing mean. If you can establish those three things, which is not a difficult thing to do, you're able to show that the person who's executed the will was capable of doing so.
Now, even though it's generally beneficial to go to a skilled attorney to draft a will because he or she may be able to save you in taxes, may be able to avoid a contest by drafting certain things properly, how about on the back end, after somebody dies, are there any circumstances where maybe there's not a lot of money where you really don't need a lawyer to go handle the estate?
That's the typical situation that we face in our court, where we'll get this phone call. And we'll say, and people will ask us flat out, you know, do I need an attorney to do this? And the answer is generally not. If you have everybody in your family on the same page and you know that you're not going to face a contest and the will is fairly simple in scope and you have people who are getting gifts under the will whom you would expect would be getting gifts, this is going to be a slam dunk. And this is a situation where our probate clerks are very, very user-friendly. The forms are not difficult to complete. Our probate clerks actually sit with the public, by and large, on many occasions to help them through the information that they need to complete on the forms. It's a matter, really, of knowing where the original will is, obtaining a death certificate, and filling out what is a fairly simple set of forms. Under those circumstances, and again, assuming that everybody's on the same page and you're not going to have a contest, this is something you can accomplish without the assistance of an attorney.
Now, what happens if somebody, before they file the will, you know, they want to make a copy of it, so they take the staples out, put it through the copy feeder, and then want to go probate it?
Yeah, this is a common, well, we'll call it a boo-boo. It's not fatal. But often this happens, and this is usually a law office issue. We recommend, and quite frankly, the law supports the fact that if once a will is fastened, it should not be taken apart for any reason. In the event it is taken apart and restapled, and the court clerk observes that there are staple holes outstanding, somebody who was involved in the unstapling and refastening of the will is going to have to submit an affidavit to the court to demonstrate what the circumstances surrounding that unfastening and refastening were. Otherwise, it looks suspicious. It looks perhaps as, and in this day and age, since the mid-90s, since I've been in the court, I mean, the world has changed in terms of word processing. It's very easy now to take an instrument and basically duplicate it and perhaps doctor it. It's a lot easier than it was in the old days when you had very formal instruments which were wrapped in beautiful red and blue ribbon. It's a different ballgame, and this is something that is a common concern.
So it's not fatal, but it would raise some scrutiny.
It would raise some scrutiny by the court. Again, not fatal. An affidavit from a person who had knowledge of the circumstances surrounding the stapling, unstapling, and restapling of the will would be sufficient to get over that hump.
We're having a very interesting conversation with Joe Assetta, who's been at the surrogates court for well over a decade. And he's now the court attorney and referee at the Westchester County Surrogates Court. We're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with the show.
Sooner or later, disability or illness strikes every family. And unfortunately, that's not the time to do the planning. The best time is in advance, before a crisis strikes.
Bernie Crooks from the law firm of Lippman Crooks.
Susan, Vincent and Sheila's oldest daughter, had called us because one of her friend's parents recently had been diagnosed with Alzheimer's and their financial affairs were a mess. They had not done any advance planning.
Susan didn't want that to happen to her parents. The caring professionals at Lippman Crooks helped her design a comprehensive plan that provided for long-term care while protecting her parents' hard-earned assets.
Susan and her siblings now have the peace of mind of knowing that their parents can go on with the rest of their lives without having to worry about what would happen if one of them became sick or disabled.
Your parents had big plans for you. Make sure you have one for them. Call the law offices of Lippman Crooks in White Plains and Manhattan.
Peace of mind with Lippman Crooks.
Call 914-684-2100.
Welcome back. I'm Bernie Crooks, host of Peace of Mind with Bernie the Attorney. And we're talking to Joe Assetta. And Joe, we've been talking about probating and wills, but not everybody dies with a will, do they?
No.
So what happens then?
Well, it doesn't mean that you don't have an estate. What we're looking for in the court and what, you know, people should be looking for once someone, a loved one has died, that person generally has assets and those assets have to be administered. Now, the person who's died, you would hope, would have taken matters into their own hands by drafting a will before they died. Okay, and that's more typically than not, that's the situation.
How would you know if they did that?
Hopefully there would be a will on file, or hopefully a family member close to the decedent would have knowledge of where an original will would be.
On file with the court.
Technically, it could be on file with the court, not necessarily. It may be on file in an attorney's office. It may very well be in the possession of the decedent. And this tripped a tripwire with me that people often think that the safest place to keep a will is a safety deposit box.
Is that right?
Well, that's the last place you want to keep it because you need a fiduciary or a court order, in essence, to go into the safety deposit box to look for the will.
All right, so you heard it here.
Yeah, don't put the wills in a safety deposit box. That's the worst place you can keep it. You want to keep it if you opt not to keep it in the possession of the attorney who helped draft it, or if you opt not to file it with the surrogate's court in the county where you live, and you opt to keep it among your own possessions. You know, keep it with your most important papers, where you know somebody who's going to have access to those papers is going to look.
Okay, so now we determined that we've looked through the binder, we went under the mattress, we went to the lawyer who was the longtime attorney, and they all say, you know, we talked to Mary, and she just never thought she was going to die. She didn't have a will, but she does have assets. Is it the same process as if she died with a will?
Well, we can go one of two ways here, Bernie. Quite often, we're lucky enough to have a photocopy of the will. And there's a statute in New York which allows for the probate of a photocopy provided certain facts occur.
So boo-boo, but not fatal.
Not fatal. Typically, in order to get the copy of the will, you really have to have witnesses that had photographic memories. And you basically have to have a situation where everybody's on the same page. If you're going to run into any issues there with respect to the substantive terms of the will and people challenging that, that's going to be a problem. But again, that could happen. But in the event that you can't get a copy of a will admitted, and in fact there is no will, what happens is the person is deemed to have died intestate. That's a technical term that we use in the court to say that somebody's died without a will. That doesn't mean they don't have an estate. In estates where people die with a will, a fiduciary is appointed. That person is named in the will. That person, and I've alluded to this earlier, is called an executor. The fiduciary of a person who dies without a will is called an administrator. And there's a statutory pecking order in New York of who can be an administrator of a person's estate who dies without a will. And it generally mirrors the distribution of those who you expect to be loved ones in somebody's life. A spouse, then children, then parents, then grandchildren, then grandparents, then aunts and uncles and cousins and first cousins. And lastly, but not least, if there are people and you've gone all the way down the family tree and nobody is able to step forward and be the fiduciary, each county in the state has a financial officer of some sort called a public administrator who would then step forward to administer that estate where there is no will.
So basically, if I'm understanding it correctly, everybody has the right to appoint their own person to administer the estate.
Provided
they execute a will. And they have the right to give the property to whomever they like.
Yes.
But if they don't, then the state is going to determine who's the executor or administrator and who gets the property.
Well, Bernie, to go a step further than that, not only is that the case in terms of the appointment of who can administer the estate, but the state also has a statutory scheme by which the assets are going to be distributed. In other words, you have the person who's administering the estate has no say in who's going to get what. The statute in New York, we call it the intestate distribution statute under the Estates Powers and Trust Law, sets forth in a distributive formula who gets assets. And again, this typically follows the bloodline. Spouse, if somebody dies with a spouse and children, the spouse and the children are going to divide up the estate ratably. If there's no spouse and children, the children divide up ratably. If there's no spouse and no children, you start working your way down the family tree chart. It would go to parents, then grandparents, and the same people that I just named earlier.
So what happens if I die without a will, but I have property that's in like a joint bank account with my children? Are they going to get it, or is intestacy going to control?
Well, this now goes to the nature of the asset that you have. You should think of probate and administration and the topics that we've discussed tonight in terms of the assets that are strictly in the deceased person's name. If they're solely in the deceased person's name, those are the assets that are subject to either a probate proceeding in our court, whether it's disputed or not disputed, or an administration proceeding in our court. But those are the assets that you're talking about when you're dealing with somebody's probate or intestate estate. In the case that you just raised, when you're dealing with assets that are held jointly or assets where there's a named beneficiary, such as life insurance, those assets pass outside of the estate, and the court doesn't have any dealings with those. So those assets technically, for gross estate purposes and for estate tax purposes, ultimately you have to account for those assets. But for the purposes of probate and for the purposes of somebody's will or for the purposes of intestate distribution, those assets don't figure into the equation.
So is it true then that if all my assets are joint, I don't really need a will?
Well, you never know what's lurking out there. And the statement that you made very simplistically is true. But we like to tell people you don't know what's lurking out there. You don't know if there are rolls of cash stuck in a wall or under a mattress, or if there are stock certificates that are out there that are buried somewhere.
So it's better to be safe and have a will.
Well, we not only encourage a will, but at some point there should be a fiduciary to make that search and to satisfy the deceased person's loved ones that the assets that have been distributed are in fact the only assets that are out there.
We're going to take one last quick break and we'll be right back to wrap things up.
Every parent worries about their kids. Unfortunately, when you have a child with disabilities, the worries are much greater.
Here's Bernie Crooks from the law firm of Littman Crooks.
Amy and Bruce had been talking about going to a lawyer to help them ever since Charlie was born. Charlie has cerebral palsy.
The experts at Littman Crooks helped Amy and Bruce set up a special needs trust to provide for Charlie's medical and financial needs for today and for the future.
The rules are very complex. You truly do need an expert to help you navigate through all the federal and state regulations to make sure that your child gets the benefits he or she is entitled to.
Do you have a child with special needs? Call the law offices of Littman Crooks.
We don't know what the future holds for Amy, Bruce, or their son Charlie, but what Amy and Bruce do know is that they've done everything in their power to ensure that Charlie has the best quality of life possible when Amy and Bruce are here and when they're not here.
Peace of mind.
Littman Crooks, NY Plains, Manhattan, or online at specialneedsnewyork.com.
Just the county surrogate's court. And Joe, we've got to wrap up now, but I'm sure the public would love to know how they can get in touch with the court. Internet, telephone number, what have you got?
Telephone number wise, Bernie, the public, we encourage you to call one of the either the deputy chief clerk or the chief clerk. Those telephone numbers are 824-5646 and 824-5626. If you have a legal question, you should be put in contact with the member.